D News. I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next. And we welcome you to the Monday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg.
I'm really excited to be reconnecting on the morning show today with Doug Instanis, Managing Artistic Director of the Racine Theatre Guild, and Jocelyn Fish, Director of Marketing and Development. And the two of them have been tied up, swallowed up, embraced by an incredibly important project that is soon to be shared with the public, a presentation, a digital presentation, a virtual presentation of the Laramie Project. And the Laramie Project springs out of a heartbreaking tragedy in the fall of 1998 when a gay young man named Matthew Shepard was brutally assaulted and left for dead and ultimately died of his injuries. It was a shocking hate crime that really transformed the national conversation about a lot of different related issues. And to pursue the tragedy and to understand how such a thing could happen, a play eventually took place called The Laramie Project that sprang from a number of interviews that were done with residents of Laramie, Wyoming. And this Laramie Project will be presented by the Racine Theatre Guild, shared with the public beginning this Friday, the 23rd of July, and running through early August. And Doug Instanis and Jocelyn Fish will be sharing with us at least some idea of what has been involved in putting together this really important presentation. Doug Instanis, Jocelyn Fish, we welcome both of you back to the morning show.
Thank you.
Thanks.
So, Doug, first maybe you could just kind of give us an idea of why this project made sense to you, why you thought it made sense for the Theater Guild to take this up at a point in time when the Guild has been, in a sense, trying to figure out how to do theater during a time when that is all but impossible.
Yeah, you know, I kind of went back on my word. We're talking about this being a hard time and COVID and everybody being sad, and so let's do comedies and do something fun and uplifting. And then I proposed the Laramie Project, which is not fun and uplifting. Well, it's uplifting in some ways, but it's not a fun project. I remember seeing Parkside's production of the Laramie Project many years ago, and I was very impressed with it. And for years, it's been on our play reading list of possible shows. And for one reason or another, we never seemed to pick that. But this year, we're looking for what plays could we do online, and we could do them safely, and we could do social distancing and keep the COVID rules and regulations, but yet still do something theatrical. And we kept revisiting the Laramie Project because it's written in interview format, and most of the scenes are individual people. There are a few scenes where two people are together, but most of the time it's one person giving their perspective on stuff. And I said, wow, you know, we could do that. And then the play is written for eight people. And I thought, well, what if we just, I think there's like 87 parts, 88 parts, something like that, that all these people are supposed to play multiple roles. I said, well, what if we have individual people play that? We could have this a community-wide event where we could all come together and Theater Guild volunteers and members of the community, everybody have one role and expand this and make this a citywide production. You talked about Laramie. This tragedy brought the people of Laramie together. So maybe this play could bring the people of Racine together and do something positive and yet still do a play safely. So all those things came to mind, and we decided to try to get as many people involved in the community from different aspects, business to education to religion, law enforcement, all sorts of different people have come together to put this project on. And some of them only have one line and some of them have quite a bit of lines. Matter of fact, we had so many people that wanted to participate that we chose to recreate some of the historic photos. The Matthew Shepard Foundation gave us a lot of historical research, and there's marches and there's vigils. And so to get more people involved, we staged those in our parking lot. So we had a vigil on our stage, and we did a little homecoming march in our parking lot so we could get people and more people involved. So in the end, about 100 different people from all walks of life have come together to support this project. So we're very excited.
Including some people who have never had any connection with the Racine Theater Guild, or maybe have sat in the audience, but have never been in any production. So you cast the net far and wide. When you say we, obviously the Guild is not operating as it typically does. And under normal circumstances, you don't just get to announce that, or you don't get to just unilaterally decide we're going to do play X. I mean, there's quite a gauntlet involved in putting together exactly what the season looks like. I suspect the gauntlet's not quite the same, but who ended up making the decision to mount this?
Well, of course, the board makes all the final decisions on what we do. So I was charged with trying to come up with ideas to keep the membership active and to make a buck or two to try to keep paying the heating and lighting bill during this time. So we propose a number of things, and we're kind of a two-person film crew. Jocelyn has been learning about editing and filming, and we did a Packy Play online. We did a Sincerely Yours series, which was a thank you to the donors, where we did theatrical scenes, and we did a spotlight concert where we posted it. And so this kind of came out of that. We did some smaller projects, and we were excited about how those turned out. And so we proposed to do a full-length one and brought it to the board. And everybody was extremely excited about doing this. And I don't think before have I had so many people wanting to be involved in a project in my life. You know, over 100 people wanting to be part of this, and many people that just couldn't participate because of time frame. So I think everybody in the Theater Guild was excited about it, but you know, the board finally approved unanimously that we should go online. You know, it's not just about what play to do. It's the fact that we are a theater, a live theater, and producing something online is very different for us. So there's a lot of concern about how that translates and how does that represent the Theater Guild, especially from our marketing side over here. You know, we're not a movie company. So what are we going to do that's different, that's unique, and special, and not just produce a bad movie? So there was a lot of discussion about quality. Mm-hmm. And we're lucky because we have a board member, Bob Benson, and his son Carter, who have a lot of editing experience. And so they came on board. So with their experience and with, you know, a great script, we decided, well, we'll give it a shot. See if this works out.
And part of that process too was actually putting together a kind of practice run, a dry run of about a 15-minute, could this even be possible? Because like Doug was saying, we wanted to not make it just here's one film scene after another film scene after another film scene. A lot of it became how do you make the stage transfer to the screen in some way? So we like to say that it's not quite a movie, it's not quite a play, it's more of a multimedia production, and that's what the practice run was all about. And once the board saw that, they were gung-ho about going forward. And so that's actually been, this process has been going since, including that time, since March. So it's quite a lot to put this production together as far as the time frame goes, let alone, you know, managing 100 actors and actresses. And then, of course, like Doug said, the big chunk of the editing from Bob and Carter has been, they've been incredible, giving so generously of their time to make this all possible.
I think the demo thing was really important because some of the people involved in the production have, like you said, have never worked at the Theater Guild, and they don't know me very well, and they don't know the Theater Guild work well, and yet they trusted that this was going to turn out well. You know, these people have more to lose than they do to gain from this production, and yet people like the mayor and other city officials and retired judges and policemen and business leaders and pastors all came together with just a trust that we weren't going to hang them out to dry, that we were going to make them look good and be part of something that was good. So it's the trust level was really high. So it was really important that we came up with that demo version, so they kind of got a sense of what we were asking them to do.
Right. So in other words, that trust was earned. I mean, they didn't just trust you because you seemed like a nice guy, but they trusted you because they saw that demo, that 15-minute demo, and realized how seriously this was going to be done. And and then people came aboard. Jocelyn, did you immediately feel enthusiastic about this? When I assume Doug mentioned this to you, at least informally, before taking it any further.
Oh, definitely. So Doug, I think you had me read the script probably like September of last year. Again, we've been talking about how to engage with the community different ways. And I was familiar with the play, but I had not read the script before, and was very moved by what was written, the reality of it, you know, the good, the bad, the ugly, as this play goes. It deals a lot with hate, but it deals a lot with compassion as well. And, you know, even though it is about Laramie, it's very important that you understand what Laramie is. You know, that I think that's one of the key messages of the play is don't make assumptions about a place. Get to know the residents, because I think a lot of people do have an image of what Wyoming is and what your life would be like as a gay person in Wyoming. And that's a lot of the discussions in the play. And then, of course, about who Matthew was and what he meant to people and how he lived his life. So it's a whole spectrum of ideas going on in this play. And so then as we were moving forward, you know, like Doug said, it's been quite the learning process for both of us. Neither of us are film people. So, you know, being behind the camera and working with Doug, trying to, you know, flesh out ideas. He had a lot of very creative ways of using people, again, throughout the community, and then where we could film something or how this scene should look, or, you know, even what props to use, et cetera, and so forth. Usually there's a larger production team that does that on stage for us, but this was for COVID protocols and for just trying to get this, even though, again, it's been since March that we've really been working on it, trying to get it completed and everything before we can fully reopen too. So it's been quite the learning process, and it's also given us the opportunity, which is something that I've enjoyed since coming here, to work throughout the community in another way too, because we are actually collaborating with the LGBT Center of Southeast Wisconsin. And Barb Farrar, who is their executive director, is actually a part of the production, but also joined us and Doug in a talk back after the production that we're putting on the end of it to kind of bring light to some of the issues that are talked about. You know, this was 1998, where are we today in 2021, and lots of things like that. And we also, through her, found a connection of Jen Palmer, who is a former Racine resident, who actually attended the University of Wyoming in Laramie with Matthew Shepard and was friends with him. So she was kind enough to also share some insights on how life and art kind of combine in this production. So lots of a very well-rounded production in the scheme of things.
Wow. For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking with Doug Instanis and Jocelyn Fish about the Racine Theater Guild's most recent project, which will be shared with the public beginning this Friday, namely a virtual production of the Laramie Project, which highlights a tragic hate crime which occurred in the fall of 1998. I'm not sure which of you wants to do this, but I think it would be important for us to take a couple of minutes to sketch kind of the historical backdrop of this incident, because of course there would be no Laramie Project, no need for it without this terrible thing that occurred. So why don't one of you flesh out the bare bones of what I just spelled out in terms of what happened to Matthew Shepard and who he was?
So in 1998, Matthew Shepard was a student at the University of Wyoming in Laramie, and he had gone out to the bar for an evening and met a couple of guys, Russell Henderson and Aaron McKinney, who were never quite sure what the story really is, but convinced him to leave with them. They took him out into the middle of nowhere, countryside of Laramie, and said that he made a move on them. He tried to seduce them, et cetera, and so forth. And so they beat him. They hit him with their pistol. They kicked him. They just brutally, savagely beat him and tied him to a fence and left him to die. About 18 hours later, a student was biking out in that area and stumbled upon Matthew and thought he was a scarecrow, before realizing it was a real human being. And they were able to transport him to a local hospital, but he had to be, I believe, transferred then to Colorado, where he did eventually die from the injuries he sustained from that beating. And so this brought to light a lot of discussion around hate crimes, around the gay panic defense, around how do two individuals that grew up in this town of Laramie just go from, you know, living their lives to beating someone so savagely within an inch of their life. And it was a national dialogue, it was an international dialogue, and a lot did come out of it as far as I think people learned and grew from it. But then there's also a big discussion in the production itself too about legislation that did or did not come out of this. Matthew Shepard's parents actually did start a foundation in his memory that, like Doug said, has been very integral to putting this production together, because they will provide you with resources, articles of photos, of videos of Matthew, of the incident, of, you know, what happened surrounding that to make the production whole. And it gives it a really strong sense of reality, because this is something that did happen. I think that's the thing that you remind yourself of as you watch it and as you listen to it, because sometimes you can take yourself out and say, oh, this is just a play. But no, this is all based in reality. This is all what these people were thinking and feeling and experiencing as this Tectonic Theater Company came to town to interview them.
Tell us more, maybe Doug, let's go to you. Tell us about this play and how it took place and this Tectonic Theater Project. And do we know anything actually about them and other things that they have done, or is this?
Yeah, we use this quote to start the play. This is from the director on why they decided to do the play. And we use this, it's an author's note at the beginning of the play. Talks about there are moments in history when a particular event brings various ideologies and beliefs prevailing in a culture into sharp focus. At these junctures, the event becomes a lightning rod of sorts, attracting and distilling the essence of these philosophies and convictions. The brutal murder of Matthew Shepard was an event of this kind. In its immediate aftermath, the nation launched into a dialogue that brought to the surface how we think and talk about homosexuality, sexual politics, education, class, violence, privilege, and the rights and the differences between tolerance and acceptance. And so his idea for the Laramie Project came to ask the question about why Matthew was murdered, what happened that night, and about the town of Laramie, and how is Laramie different from the rest of the country, and how is it similar? And then he talks about, is theater an appropriate way of discussing those issues? And that is a debate we all have in the arts of, you know, life imitates art. That question, do we have a responsibility as artists to comment on current events, or are we just supposed to entertain people and make pretty noise and make beautiful music together? So those things were going through his mind. And so that he sent his company out there to ask those questions, to try to discover why this happened and could this happen in any town in America. And I think that's his point, is that it's not just Laramie, it could happen anywhere. These, the people that he chose to represent in the play are average Americans with average thoughts and feelings and education and backgrounds. And so, you know, his point was to try to make sense of it and to tell Matt's story and honor his memory. But it's, you know, plays are universal. They have to do with universal themes. And even though it was very important for me to have pictures of Matt and talk about Matt, and this is Matt's story, it's really a universal story that, you know, a dad lost his son, friends lost people that they cared about, a city was marked as this evil, awful place full of hatred, when as we will learn in the talk back, it's not that place. Laramie was a fairly progressive town during the day that gay people felt fairly safe in. And so that dialogue is important, and it's a universal quality, and we see ourselves in many of the different characters and the questions that they ask and how they respond and how we blame. And I think the thing that I'm, you know, there's a lot of tragedy, and we always want to make sense of it, and we always want to find a positive thing. Like, the people of Laramie aren't bad. There's one of the college students talks about, you know, this happened here, and we have to own that this mm-hmm. happened here. So I don't know, I think there's a lot of great things, even though it's very specific, and we've done our best to use historic photos of Laramie. This mm-hmm. could happen anywhere, at any time, at any place. And unfortunately, it could still happen now. And I think that's one of the reasons why we're showing this, is while things have gotten better, you know, this still could happen and has happened to different people in different parts of the country.
And to Doug's point too with that, again, the Matthew Shepard Foundation has been a very great asset throughout this. And we did actually receive a video from Dennis and Judy, Matthew's parents, that kind of welcomes everyone to the performance. And Dennis has a great little bit just at the beginning that said, take out that this is a quote unquote gay issue, put in race, put in religion, put in any other topic like that. And this play still applies, you know, it's a very like general, but also specific kind of look on life and on a place and what could and could not happen.
Yeah, when we isolate somebody and we, you know, try to find differences in them, then, you know, it's easy to discriminate against them. And I think this play talks about, one of my favorite lines is the police detective says, "This is America. You don't get to have that fear in America." Once he started talking to people and realized how the gay community is afraid, it's like, that can't happen. It's America, you know, we're supposed to be equal, liberty and justice for all. And I don't think people realize that it is legal to discriminate in this country, in many places, against gay people. I think we think that they're a protected class, and in some cities and in some states they are, but not everywhere. It's still legal to discriminate against people. You can use your religious beliefs to discriminate against gay people. And so I think this play is still very relevant today, even though we have moved ahead and we've gotten better. And it's a dialogue that we continue to have.
We're speaking with Doug Instanis and Jocelyn Fish about the Racine Theater Guild's production of The Laramie Project, a virtual production that is going to be shared with the public this coming Friday, the 23rd of July, and will be shared through the 6th of August. And although The Laramie Project, as it was originally conceived, involves 8 actors and about 60 characters, the Theater Guild has chosen to do this in a different way, in which there is no double casting, I don't think, whatsoever. And so a wide range of people, including some who have never been part of any Racine Theater Guild production before, maybe never part of a theater production of any kind anywhere before, are part of this presentation of The Laramie Project. Maybe one of you could give the listeners a sense of the wide array of people who are represented in this. And it's probably important to know that because it really spans the gamut in terms of people mm-hmm. regarding Matthew Shepard with affection all the way to the other end of the extreme. Just give us a sense of how many people were interviewed for the formation of the Laramie Project and the kind of people we will see in this production.
Yeah. So the Tectonic Theater Company took in total about 6 trips to Laramie and interviewed over 200 people. And it was a core group of members that also kept journals. And then there was also obviously a huge spotlight on Laramie as far as the news went. So they took these interviews and those journal entries and news pieces and kind of found common themes throughout and broke it into what the Tectonic Theater Company calls moments. And so there's small moments throughout. Sometimes it's one person in that moment. Sometimes it's, you know, 4 different ministers and pastors and priests sharing their views in that one moment. So it really gave us a wide range of people to contact and get involved in the production then, because there are the good, there are the evil, there are the ignorant, there are the accepting, you know, there's the tolerant as well. There's a whole wide range of views in this production. So like Doug said, it was really important to reach out to community members because we really did want to make this a community project. And it is a very important play to tell. So we were lucky enough to have Mayor Corey Mason join us in a role and Representative Greta Neubauer, Alderman Trevor Young. We have a couple of religious figures in town. Father Ricardo Martin is actually playing a priest himself in the play. Tony Larson, who is a minister here, is playing a Unitarian minister in the play itself. So, and then, you know, a couple other of the community members are just, you know, news paper writers or newscasters or what have you. So they were really excited to, very excited. And Doug and I were thrilled at a lot of those performances too. To be in front of the camera. And then of course on the Theater Guild volunteer side, you know, we have a huge pool of very talented people that love to be involved here. And so when we put out the call for the cast, we were happily overwhelmed with the amount of people that wanted to be involved. And, you know, some of these people have only done one production at the Theater Guild. Some of them have grown up here. Some of them have been involved for 20 plus years. Some of them are named Greg Berg. Who also have
or related to Greg
Berg. Related to Greg Berg, who also have a role in the production. And that also then opened the opportunity, because we were making this a community-wide project and had so many people involved, of giving us the chance to film in a lot of really cool locations in town as well. So JJ McCullough, for instance, who owns McCullough's Pub here on the south side of Racine, he plays a bar owner in the production, and we were able to film, I think, like 8 scenes in his bar. He was very generous with his time and let us come in there and bring people in one at a time and film.
I want to say that location looks so incredibly authentic. I mean, you would just swear that that's a place someplace in rural Wyoming, and it works perfectly. It was a great, great choice.
It is. And another great location that we got to be in was actually the Racine County Courthouse. We got access to a courtroom in there. And so that made the scenes of the actual trial very impactful, I think, in the scheme of things. And, you know, also got to use a coffee house in town or just be downtown Racine, or if we needed a field, we found a field, you know, so people are very willing to work with us and both on the, in front of the camera, behind the camera, setting the stage kind of side of things.
Yeah, your boss at Carthage, Dr. Swallow, is also playing the Wyoming president of the university. And so we got to use his office and, you know, the life and art thing was really important to me in asking some of these community people to join us. You know, we've got 2 police officers playing actual police officers or detectives, and Judge Miller, who is just retired from the bench, he plays a judge. We have a Racine County DA, mm-hmm. bar owners, priests, business owners, you know, all those people were willing to lend their voice. Now, it's very interesting. The community people were very concerned about not playing bad guys because you know how people will quote them, you know, and actually JJ was very concerned that his bar was going to be seen as some place for evil people to go. And I said, no, on the other hand, it's actually a very positive message. And because people wanted to lend positive reinforcement. And so the Theater Guild people took on all the bad guys. So it's interesting because in this format, in because it looks like interviews and it looks like real people, people could mix up. Is that an actor or is that the real person? You know, and when someone sees you walking down the street and you've said some very awful things, you know, some people may not really understand that this is acting. And that's the beauty of this play. It's written so well. It's so natural that everybody just comes across very honest. And even in the really hateful things that people say, it's scary. It's pretty scary.
I wondered what it felt like for you to go up to certain Theater Guild regulars, part of the faithful who have been part of the guild for a long time, and ask them to portray some of the darkest moments, some of the darkest characters in this play. What was it like for you to extend such an invitation, and what's your sense of what it was like for some of them to accept an invitation like that?
You know, Greg, this is amazing. It didn't matter if it was one line or if it was a couple paragraphs. I've never had so much excitement about a play or just people wanting to participate. They didn't care what it was. I'm a reporter, fine. I'm a voiceover for reading an email, fine. I'm the bad guy, fine. Great, when do we start? It's very inspiring for me to have so many people being so thrilled just to participate, even individuals. Okay, I'm just gonna take your picture. Great, when do we start? So there was a big excitement. And when we put out a call asking people if they wanted to participate, we got a list of people, and then I tried to match it by age and, you know, kind of type, unfortunately. You know, you're supposed to be an old guy, young guy, type of thing. And so I just asked people and they all said, great. And when we filmed it, we talked a little bit about it. You know, actors like to play bad guys too. It's something so different from them in real life that it's kind of exciting for them to play bad guys. So I tell you, everybody was excited about the project.
And I would say it was a really, knowing these people, it's a very interesting juxtaposition to watch them say things they would never say in real life standing in front of you. I think probably for Doug and I, the most shocking one, of course, is one of the characters in the play is Reverend Fred Phelps from the Westboro Baptist Church. And Michael Klickner, who is a former professor at UW-Parkside, and actually did take on that role when UW-Parkside did the production because they didn't want any of the students to have to play that role. When Doug and I were filming him here at the Theater Guild, he completely transformed into Michael, such a warm, welcoming human being. And then to hear such hatred and such horrible, awful things coming out of his mouth was just shocking. But he did a wonderful job at it because that's what a great actor does.
We're so nervous about that story. That's part of this story.
Yeah.
We filmed it in the back of the theater and he was so loud, we thought someone was going to call the police because, oh my, it was just, he's screaming and yelling and saying all these hateful things. We're going, uh-oh, we should have warned the police that we were doing this because somebody's going to turn us in.
Wow. Well, ultimately, of course, although that's an element of the story, what emerges is a very well-rounded portrait mm-hmm. of Laramie and its citizens. And we really learn a lot about kind of the complexity of human beings, the importance of not jumping to simplistic conclusions about who people are or what they think and so on. And Doug, you said, although this is a dark and heavy and ultimately tragic story, that there's also a very much an uplifting element to it. And what did you mean by that?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a line that one of the students talks about. They interview Jedediah quite a bit throughout the play and how he starts and his feelings about the crime and homosexuality in the town and how over time that changes. And I think they talk about in this play about changing and moving forward. And the police detective talks about it too. Before I started investigating this and talking to people and knowing what people's fears were, I felt one way. And now I feel differently. And I think that's what the play talks about, mm-hmm. is knowledge and learning and experiencing and putting yourself in other people's shoes. And we talk about that in theater all the time, you know, walking in someone's footsteps and empathy. And I think we start off better. You know, this the priest also says something. He said, Matthew has, I don't know anybody who has done, I'm paraphrasing now, so much good for this community than Matthew. And basically what he was talking about is Matthew's death sparked this conversation and this growth in a community. And while we have a long way to go, we started that process and people are better. Yep. And so I think that's where you're left with this sparkling image of Laramie and their growth, and that maybe some good has come from this awful, awful event.
And I think, you know, Doug and I have been in this project for almost 3 months now. And the fact that we both have watched scenes as Bob and Carter have been editing them, and you can still feel the emotional impact, even though you've watched the scene about 10, 15 times, is pretty incredible. One of the most moving ones, in my opinion, is Moises, the director of the show, is talking of the play. The Tectonic Theater Company is talking about the vigils that were held after Matthew was in the hospital and then after he died as well. And there's just very powerful images, and it's a moment of music and images. And it really does show that in the depths of tragedy, a community can come together and can either learn from it, celebrate it in a way that they still take something from it. That's a universal thing. I think we've seen that a lot in the last year, obviously with the Black Lives Matter movement and Jacob Blake and George Floyd, but then also, you know, just in a year of where we've been so isolated, I think that was another key point with this play, is that it's been a year and a half since we've been able to bring people and have live theater and, you know, in a time where it has been a kind of tragic here at the Theater Guild, this has brought people together. And so it's again, the life imitating art side of things. So,
as I watched a brief excerpt from it, one of the things I was struck by was Moises Kaufman again, who conceived of the project and helped sort of facilitate it, mentioned something about the safety rules that were in effect. Members of his company went to Laramie to conduct these interviews. And until I heard those words, safety rules, about that, it hadn't really occurred to me what a courageous step they were taking. Mm-hmm. Going in, theater folks from who knows where, going into Laramie, Wyoming, and being willing to engage with the community there, not knowing what kind of welcome might greet them, or hostility or resentment or resistance. It just really renewed my sense of gratitude that not only that they had the idea, but then they also had the guts to carry it out, mm-hmm. to do these interviews. Right.
And a couple of the members of the company were gay, and there was some concern about that, you know, and, Moises also did the movie version, which highlights that a little bit more than the play. The play is very similar to the movie, but there is a couple scenes that's fleshed out with, that some of the gay characters were very, very nervous about putting themselves in that situation and talking to people. And so, yeah, safety concerns. There's one of the characters, Greta's character, talks about safety and being afraid when a car stops, turns around and comes back her way. They talk about showing public affection for your partner, how dangerous that can be. And, you know, that's still the case today in some areas of town or in this country.
Jocelyn, just have a couple of minutes for this. I wish we had longer for you to be able to say some words of praise for Bob and Carter Benson, who have done incredible work to stitch all of this together. Just give our listeners at least a vague idea of the scope of this kind of accomplishment, what kind of challenge it has been to stitch all of these individual elements together into a cohesive whole.
It's been quite something. Again, a whole learning process for all of us. We actually filmed in total almost all the videos in a span of 19 days in May. 19 days straight of filming, and then a couple more into June. So in total, we cut those all up. You know, some people again had one line, some people had huge monologues of a couple paragraphs, things like that. It was about 215 plus individual videos, and then we had voiceovers as well, because in the stage production of this, it's a 8 people playing 10 characters, so you have to kind of let the audience know who each character is. So translating that to 80 people and capturing all that information was key. So Carter and Bob have been so instrumental in even just like even the trimming of a scene where you can hear Doug and me directing in the beginning to cut us out of there, to cut us out of the end. The birds are too loud in this scene, bringing the noise levels down, adding in crowd noise, if noise needs to be added. Obviously the pictures and other media element has been very big. Doug's been storyboarding how we envision the scene to be, and they've been working with what you can do. And of course, as you look at things, you're like, on our end, we wish we could have maybe shot that a little different or something like that. But overall, it's been coming together, I think, better than we could have hoped for. We turned over all the info and we were like, oh gosh, this is going to, I mean, it's been a lot to handle and manage. And I think we all can't wait to get back to live theater, but this has really come to represent a lot of different things, both story-wise and theatrical-wise, in the scheme of the production.
And this will make you happy, Mr. Music Man, that, music really makes a difference in film compared to the stage. You watch a movie, everything's underscored with something. Mm. And most often it's music or crowd noise or something. And that's something we didn't really take into account until we were watching these scenes and how they're linked together. And those pauses, there's just, we need something there. And so, finding the appropriate piece of music this is a reason why editors get, and sound designers get Academy Awards, because it is so vitally important to support the actor with music or some effect that really helps that mood. So along with the video editing and the sound editing and the putting in the videos and the all the pictures and all the media, it's a big effort.
So the public gets to see this impressive final project beginning Friday evening. So Jocelyn, explain how somebody gets to watch this sometime between July 23rd and August 6th.
Yes. So tickets actually will go on sale tomorrow, Wednesday, the 21st. And you can go to the Theater Guild website. And just like you would be purchasing a ticket to a play, you just click on buy ticket. You will have the option to purchase an individual stream. So if it's just you at home watching, or if it's your whole family watching, there's a household stream purchase as well. So once you actually do purchase it, you'll be sent an email with a link to the stream, and you'll get your own unique code that all you have to do once you hit that link is enter that code, and you'll be able to watch it anytime you want in between the 23rd and the 6th. And I just hope people do. There's a little FAQ on the website to hopefully answer some questions. Of course, we'll be here at the Theater Guild to hopefully diagnose any tech issues as well. But yeah, it'll all come together, and you'll be able to sit down at home and enjoy it, and maybe have a discussion with your family about it, or just appreciate the art of it, or learn something new, or say, hey, I know that person on the screen.
Right, and people are very apt to know more than a few people who are part of this. It's extraordinary in its scope and impact, and I know those who actually did participate are going to be invited to gather and watch it together in in physically distanced circumstances, but a way to experience this together. So again, this is the Laramie Project with the Racine Theater Guild, and it begins streaming to the public on Friday, July 23rd through the 6th of August, and you can go to racinetheater.org for more information. And Doug, I know that later in August, you will be making some kind of announcement regarding next season for the Racine Theater Guild. I know at the moment there's not a whole lot you can say.
Right. You know, our patrons have been so generous to us and patient as we announced a season, and then they paid for it, and then we canceled it, and then we changed the season and postponed it, and then we canceled it. So we're very nervous about doing that a third time, because most often those patrons have been very wonderful to us and have donated ticket money back to us, and been very generous with donations. So we're being very cautious about when we actually announce. So we got to be 100% sure that we are up and running and that we're back to business as usual, because of what we do and how close we are to each other and the whole theater rehearsing experience. We just need to make sure that everyone's safe. So hopefully, by the end of August, we plan on announcing what we're going to do. It's probably going to be a shortened season starting late fall with our subscription series. And in early fall, we hope to do concerts, Gene's Jazz, Signature Spotlight, non-subscription plays. That way, if people are still nervous, they don't have to come, and we can socially distance. You know, when we do a concert, it's easier for us to follow COVID protocols than it is for us to do Mamma Mia or something like that. So the plan is early fall to do some shows, some fundraisers, some thank you events for our patrons. And then, late fall, winter, we'll be up and running with assigned seating, subscription series. People that have had season tickets for 40 years can come back and enjoy the same seats.
Well, we'll look forward to that announcement towards the end of August. And in the meantime, we want to remind everyone again about the Laramie Project, which begins streaming to the public this Friday, July 23rd through August 6th, and go to racinetheater.org for more information. Doug Instanis, Jocelyn Fish, thanks for being part of the morning show today.
Thank you, Greg.
Tomorrow on the morning show, you'll hear my interview with Roger Bennett, who is probably best known as co-host of the very entertaining TV show and podcast Men in Blazers. He is also the author of a entertaining and interesting memoir called Reborn in the USA. Born and raised in Liverpool, England, Roger Bennett has always wanted to live in the United States from a very, very early age. And he eventually got his wish and recently actually became a U.S. citizen. We're going to hear his story on tomorrow's morning show. Wednesday, Brian Albrecht will join us, the president of Gateway Technical College, paying his monthly visit to the program.
The Morning Show airs every weekday morning between 8 and 9 o'clock. The program is archived on our website, wgtd.org. The program is also available to you as a podcast, actually 7 days a week. This past weekend on Saturday, we had a rebroadcast from way back in 1998 with the late Kurt Chalgren and three students who were part of Kids from Wisconsin. And it was fun to hear those voices again. And we replayed that in anticipation of the current Kids from Wisconsin performing in Kenosha this Saturday.